This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
So next is Robert Mahoney. Mahoney's, an, among other capacities, is an art critic based in New York, and he received his master's in English and American Literature from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He currently covers art and writes about art for magazines including Time Out New York, Art on Paper, Art News, Art and Magazine, and ArtNet, an online magazine, among others. He's previously taught art history at New York University from 1992 to 93, as well as the School of Visual Arts from 90 to 93. He's the author of numerous private gallery and museum art catalogs, including that on the artist Bruce Hellander, which came out from Grassfield Press in 94. Likewise, he's curated multiple exhibits, and some of these include Cultus at Spot Space in Soho in 1994, Tabloid at the Sally Hawkins Gallery in Soho in 92, Value, a multicultural project that was exhibited in Soho Raw Space in November 91, Inherent Vice at the Center for Photography in Woodstock, and Nomos as well, the New Word Art, and that was at the Penine Hart Gallery, also in Soho in 91. And so with that, Robert Mahoney.
I wish you hadn't told me about the size of the internet audience. I'm going to go back a little bit on memory lane, and that's the point of my talk today. Because I'm here today because Osvaldo made a call to me in March of 1994 that a review that I had written on a show at Thread Waxing Space in October 1993, I wrote the review for Flash Art magazine. And he called me up and he said, "Boy, you got some things in the work that nobody's ever got, and I've got to hang on to you because nobody's ever got these things before." And I want to revisit the moment, the ideas that were on my mind, and the particular work that so excited me and really completely turned me on to his work. To just shortcut things, I guess you're going to see slides of this work this afternoon, but let me just tell you which it is so maybe you can sketch it down and kind of link it up to my remarks. The exhibition was Gone Beyond Gone, curated by Dominic Nahaus. Gone Beyond Gone. It was in September 1993 at the Thread Waxing Space in New York, and the works I'm going to be talking about are Looking Anxiously for Sassetta, The Cage, and The Peacock. Visually, you already have seen some things that are similar to the work. The images in the video, it's the same body of work that has been progressing for years. I also wanted to give you kind of a bibliography before I start because I'm pretty informal with these ideas. Most of the ideas I'm talking about today were formalized in an exhibition catalog for Oppositions and Sister Fields, which are those different moves you can make in chess, created by Sabine Vogel at the Wiener Session in Vienna, Austria in 1993. And the name of that article was Concordance, Public Art in the Nth Degree. I want to talk about what the Nth Degree is, and for the students, my ideas were developed as kind of an extension of the famous essay by Rosalind Krauss, Sculpture in the Expanded Field, and I was also really into Deleuze and Guattari's theories between state space and street space. So I want to go back to October 1993. At that time, I had been concerned about public art. And not only public art sculpture, but also the way that paintings were perceived and exhibited in museums. And I was particularly concerned that abstract public sculpture was, as we heard Osvaldo said, pissing on history, basically had no historical context. And I needed, for some reason in me, I needed a public art which talked to the space and the time continuum of the place in which it was exhibited. This may be because I come from a town in the Midwest, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where space is very simple. The space of most American cities is pretty basic. They were built in the mid-19th century, they were modernized in the 1920s, and they expanded in the boom times of the post-war era. Milwaukee is exactly that three-level space. And even today, it seems difficult to deal historically when you're building a new building with a spatial time-space continuum that simple. Milwaukee's favorite tactic is to tear down a building and build a parking garage. It's really going to be interesting, the Calatrava New Milwaukee Museum, Calatrava, the Spanish architect, his first building in America, is going to be in Milwaukee, but that should be fascinating to see how he does that. I then moved to New York because I wanted something way more complicated. And some Midwesterners actually call this the old country. These are older cities, Philadelphia, New York, Boston. The space does obviously get more complex going back to the 18th century, but not really, because the way that architecture and development has developed is basically been ignorant of history. So I kept going to Europe looking for models, and I developed an idea I call world space. World space is a conception of space in which the artist is actually aware of the history and the dynamics of the space, whether one's a center or whether it's on the periphery, and deals with all those dynamics in a work of art. I once described it in that essay as an upside-down chandelier of complexities in space. So since we have a chandelier, you can turn this one over and imagine each different time frame as like a vector kind of penetrating the space. The work that I used to exemplify this idea was the much vilified work by Daniel Boren and Collins' piece in the Palais Royal in the center of Paris. It was vilified by most of the critics and many of the French because of its abstract nature. I actually loved the piece, and I thought that it exemplified many of the things that were needed. I felt that literalism was not the way to go, figuralism was not the way to go, that an artist had to kind of develop a vocabulary which was somewhat abstract, so that if the space, you could kind of just pluck a string on a harp and kind of vibrate with the history. I felt that an artist needed to deal with the repetition of all that goes through a space. I mean, all the different time frames. I mean, again, in central Paris, we're going back to 17th century routinely, which is a much deeper space. I then kind of walked across. I remember coming out the Palais Royal to the Comédie Française, walked across to a Japanese restaurant, and on the wall above the Japanese restaurant was a little plaque, very little plaque, saying, on this site in 1345, Joan of Arc was burned at the stake. Now, from a guy from the Midwest, that just kind of, the whole bottom drops out. And I decided that I didn't want the artist to be an antiquarian. I didn't want them to be a historian. I felt that only artists and architects, could develop a structure which could be transparent enough, repetitive enough, abstract enough, that it could kind of allow the mind to appreciate the depth and the complexity of the space that you were in the time-space continuum. I actually believe that I felt kind of a natural high from being in these exciting kind of centralized spaces, and architecture often does give me this high. I call it a concordance. Everything just kind of flows together. The downside of being in an incredibly complicated world capital space is kind of the depression that results from realizing that this city got along perfectly well without you for thousands of years, and so it's kind of a... the place of the individual becomes an issue. I have been dealing with all these issues. Anyway, so my model was very specific. I needed to see in a work of public art some degree of abstraction, repetition, simulation. You needed to deal with the fact that the whole copy reality thing, whether the thing is a copy or the real thing, is becoming increasingly relevant. In my 20s, I was on a mission to see the real thing. Being thrilled by going to museums in Europe and seeing the real thing, but then being realized at the end of like a grand tour of Europe that a Tintoretto had suddenly turned into a postage stamp because I'd seen so many of the real things. So you couldn't win anyways because of the nature of travel and consciousness in the modern world. So these things were on my mind. I was worrying about these issues because of the failure of the tilted Richard Serra's Tilted Ark in New York, which was like the Waterloo of permanent public sculpture in America. I think that was 1990 he lost the case. I was excited by the Berlin Wall and the potential of that as a metaphor for other kind of walls coming down. I was kind of an anti-formalist at the time. And I needed a kind of abstract art which was referential to history and to the plight of the individual in history in a kind of abstract, transparent way. Now, I just want to throw in one more element to bring you right back to that afternoon in October 1993 when I saw Oswaldo's work. I had been on baby care duty for about 4 or 5 hours and really needed to go out to the art galleries. I lived just a few blocks from Broadway and was getting very frustrated and just wanted to get out. I remember looking at some manuscript of an article I didn't publish about Paris and was frustrated about that. I was spinning the tube and I watched, just turned on a kitschy old movie, Mistral's Daughter, which was Judith Trance's movie about a Picasso-like figure. He was played by Stacy Keach. And I realized that even the movie was like making me feel like somehow acting as a souvenir and making me kind of miss, I hadn't traveled to Paris in a few years. I'd just been kind of homebound for a while. And as a result of these kind of negative feelings, I was writing about what is a souvenir. You know, most people travel of the world and they always feel, quote, a little disappointed because of the buildup. Getting your bearings as an individual, you know, challenging yourself to confront the reality of what you're seeing is an extremely difficult thing to do. I recall in the grand tour that I took as a kid when I was 1974, sitting under the Sistine Chapel for 45, 50 minutes. That was actually the time when they just let you sat there. Now I believe they give you this really bums rush through. And first of all, it took me 20, 25 minutes to just realize that was the real thing and not like a poster. It took mental work. And then my brother came up to me and said, "What are you sitting here for so long for?" And I said, "I'm trying to have my own thought about this thing." This is like an issue that has continued through my entire art writing life, having your own thought about something that you see so often in reproduction. So I have this push and pull between acknowledging that we're in the world of the simulation, the copy, wanting the real thing. Anyways, getting back to that afternoon, one of the reason that people are disappointed, they can't kind of grasp the reality of things. So what do? In kind of a knee-jerk response, they grab a souvenir. This little piece of kitsch is like a balm. It's like a little soothing, kind of brings them back into their own framework so that they can deal with it. And that's what a souvenir is. Paris is filled with postcards, and they have these little postcards with architectural things where you can cut them out and actually make them on the make little cardboard versions of the Arc de Triomphe and all those monuments of Paris. And watching that movie, feeling frustrated, wanting to get out, I actually found some in the drawer, and after 4 years sitting in the drawer, I actually put some together. I mean, it was just killing time. I think I also had a writer's, I had a deadline like the next day. So then I get out, my wife comes home, I finally go off and I see Oswaldo's show. It consists of reproductions of old masters, classics, with a kind of spatial construct around them. You'll see. I mean, it's very much like the mannequins we saw, the same material. Spatial construct. One piece, the cage, was like this hall of mirrors of these spatial constructs. They were all taped together. This wasn't high tech. They were all taped together. And many of them had, and I have no idea if Oswaldo sees these things in any way related to kitsch or souvenirs, but they had these little cutouts of architectural forms kind of stuck on these spatial constructs around the images. So sometimes they look like blemishes, sometimes they superseded. They said to me incredible things about reproduction, the real thing, architecture, how art fits in architecture. And they had everything that I needed to see. They had abstraction, because they were abstract works of art, even though they have referential materials. Oh, are we going to get one?
Yeah,
that was the main one, the kind of before. That's the one.
Yeah, so that's.
So this is the body of work. I mean, it's a reproduction of a old master painting with this amazing kind of weird construct around it, kind of quasi-architectural. And this, I don't think it does have one of these models on it, but you can imagine all these thoughts on my mind. And I go in, I see this work, which has everything I need, abstraction, which is the construct. It's got repetition. It deals with these images are reproduced through a body of work. Simulation, all the dealings. Here's one with the little. You can see the little cardboard thing there. The real, the original, the copy. You know, how do you perceive it? And also the individual. I think the plight of the individual in Oswaldo's work is expressed by the simple means of his medium, the Scotch tape, the PVC, the plastic. I mean, this is not Damien Hirst. I think it's not Damien Hirst, not simply for economic reasons, because most artists don't have $1.2 million to fabricate their work, but it's for an intellectual reason, that it spoke to me because it was so rarefied in its concepts about, you know, seeing a work of art in a museum represented, seeing it in this hall of mirrors of representation that we live in. And yet the individual is there. It's very simple, just Scotch tape. These also reminded me of a little bit of the Mona Lisa, although Oswaldo, I don't think, did a Mona Lisa. But, you know, when you go see, did you do a Mona Lisa? And I understand the Mona Lisa is now being moved to a separate gallery, which I'm actually quite sad about, because I actually enjoyed the spectacle of this boxed object behind a glass where you had to look through the flash bulbs of tourists. And then all these other masterpieces, way, you know, lots of them being skied in the corners, completely ignored. I mean, that's interesting to me. And it's interesting that, like Luke, that people on a kitsch mission, again, see the souvenir, they zoom into the Louvre, but they go right by the corner, right by a door in the main corridor leading to the room, is Watteau's Voyage de Cythera. This is like one of the most famous paintings in Western art. It's probably the most underseen painting at the Louvre because people are moving through the door at about 40 miles an hour and they never see this painting. These issues are like really fascinating to me. They're all, you know, and they're tied up in the discourse of exhibitionism and reproduction. And I had this moment where they all came together. I wrote this review. It was like this short thesis statement of all these concerns and frustrations. And believe me, I've been writing about art for 23 years. I've been in the trenches reviewing art on a weekly or monthly basis for 17 years. These moments are incredibly rare. And when you actually develop an ongoing relationship with an artist on an intellectual basis, not just because he's your friend or whatever, it's a really exciting thing. And again, it's a very rare thing. And that's why I'm here today. And so I thought the best thing for me would be to revisit the moment when this work just really excited me. And that's my remarks. Okay? Okay.